I'm Carissa.
And we have our artist friend, Chris Dyer, on the show today.
Welcome, welcome. We appreciate you giving your time to come and speak with us. For those of you who don't know, he is an amazing artist within the kind of music festival and just making his own name. He has his, I would say, brand company called Positive Creations that has a tons of amazing stuff that you can go check out and buy. So definitely go check out his shop. But yeah, thank you again for coming on here.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me to talk.
Yeah.
I guess, how is Peru and quarantine and stuff treating you?
Yeah.
Well, Peru is a different country from the ones we're used to up in the north. Things gotta be more drastic over here because it's a crazy country with lots of people, half of them being really poor. And it's just a different equation. Like, I grew up already with curfews and terrorism and massive amounts of crime and problems. So when COVID came here, they got super strict right away. We went into 3 months of strict martial law. I was there for 3 months till I got repatriated to Canada. But I think it continued in 4 months of not being able to go out. If not, you got huge fines. Then I got repatriated to Canada and I spent the summer in Montreal till it got colder. And as like, Canada was also going in a more lockdown-ish kind of direction. So it's like, well, if I'm gonna get locked up, I'd rather get locked up in my land with my parents. We live in an acre with, you know, hundreds of fruit trees and year round, and my parents are here, and they built me an apartment that I just moved in like a month or two ago. That's like my studio. So right now, we just entered at the beginning of this week on another lockdown that's going to last a month. You're not allowed to go out. My dad can go out with a permit. He can get us food and that's it. But I live in a little village in the middle of nowhere. I got nowhere to go. We got space. We got food, sun. I'm just making my art. I'm not really thinking about it anymore that I'm locked in. If anything, I'm more worried about Canada, my original country, which is less strict in some ways, but getting more strict in other ways. But I don't know. I'm not gonna get into like massive amount of politics and my thoughts about that, because then like I'm gonna get half your audience on their bad side. But I'm not very stoked on what's going up there. So for now, I'm just gonna stay down here and just do my work, do my art, keep on trucking. I got my retreat in the jungle. Another good reason why I'm in Peru is because I'm still close to the jungle, close to the medicine, close to my shaman, which is important for my personal healing and development. So yeah, at the beginning of March, I got my next retreat. We had to make it 2 weeks long as to comply with a 2 week quarantine of foreigners coming in, which basically made it that we had to go a little bit more expensive as to pay an extra week for the people staying over, which made it that I'm already losing some of my participants. So yeah, it's really hard to keep on doing these retreats with all the, you know, blockades and restrictions and people losing their businesses and etc. But for me, it's important to keep on pushing those to happen, mostly for the healing that comes through it, both to my students and participants and for myself. So yeah, I keep on pushing to the maximum of my abilities and just stay grateful for whatever happens.
So can you go into a little bit more detail on what your retreats are? I think I saw recently you had a few students there that were artists that seemed like they were having an amazing time and exploring the medicine. Could you maybe, for people who may not know what your retreat may be, explain it a little bit?
Yeah, well, it's called a Healing Visions Retreat. It's already happened 5 times. We did the fifth one last December. It was the fifth year, and sadly only 2 students could make it from the 18 that had signed up. But students was enough students for me to do it. I didn't make any profits from that one. I actually lost a little bit, but it always makes me happy when people come and find their healing and their path and all that stuff. But basically, it's at Qatari Center, which is the healing center I've been going to for the last 7 years. It's in Tarapoto, Peru, the rainforest, the Amazon. And my shaman, who I've been also being, shaman's the incorrect term, it's curandero, it's healer, really. Shaman is more like a Siberian term, but it's, when I say shaman, people understand what I mean. So basically, my dude, Herbert Quinteros, he's been working at me for 7 years. Yeah, my homie, my doctor. And he's been working on me for 7 years, and he does great work. And as a person with a following and who was already teaching art retreats, we just decided to offer these art workshops and retreats and combine it with the medicine and see if it would work out. And it actually worked out really amazing. Lots of people have come there. They bring their issues, their problems, their struggles, and the medicine does its thing. And we do art together in nature for a week usually. And it's a beautiful thing. You know, it's total Jedi training, and it's not, say, like an easy situation. Like, these medicines are not like a walk in the park. It's hard work, it's training, it's becoming our potential through facing our bullshit and our issues. But it's a beautiful thing, and I'm so grateful to be a bridge or moderator or person who people can trust. Like, people don't know my doctor, they know me. So when they go there, like, well, if Chris Dyer said it's okay, I'll go and trust it, and I'm sure it's good. And so far, there's been 0 complaints, just people leaving there with big smiles and wanting to come back. So yeah, it's a blessed situation. I'm grateful to the medicine, to nature, to the jungle of Peru, and I welcome everybody to join us if they can make it out here for us to like make art and heal and become better human beings at a time where we all really want a better world. And our opinion of how to create that better world is very different from person to person. But at the end of the day, if we all become better individual people, that will emanate and create a better world. So I think that's super crucial work to be done.
I agree for sure. Definitely agree. I'm fairly new to at least your art. I think I found you within the last year and within 2019, 2020 area. And I had no idea that you had done those retreats, and seeing that in December, it's definitely on my bucket list to at least try and get done and go out to the jungle and try those medicines for myself. And like how you said, if Chris Dyer says it's okay, then I kind of trust you. You know, your art's really, really powerful and really has a lot of just kind of meaning behind it. And the way you structure your art and detail it out is just really beautiful. And I just want to let you know that I appreciate it in the sense of just as a very early beginning artist as well.
Thank you.
It was nerve-wracking at the beginning
because though the medicine works for me, it's powerful technology, and I was like, well, I don't know if this is going to help or not other people. And I've worked really hard to, you know, build my art and my brand reputation, and you're bringing them to a situation that's powerful, you know. And but as I said, my doctor is very competent. The place is super safe. We would never let anybody get harmed. We make sure that everybody leaves there healed to some degree. It all depends on the personal work each one does, of course. So yeah, join us anytime, girls.
I look forward to a very, like I said, a guided spiritual journey, like I said, guided by somebody who's been doing it for natives and people of that, who are curious of the jungle and its natural medicines, that knows how to guide that experience, is just really appealing to me. So I look forward to attempting that journey one day in my future.
I know a lot of veterans too that try the medicine, that it says it helps with their PTSD stuff. So I'm hoping to make it down there for that kind of reason, just to, like, I hear it does wonders. That's mostly where.
Right. Yeah. One of the two people who came last December was a veteran. She was, what was she? I don't know the term. She wasn't bi. She was, poly. There you go. Okay. She was a poly veteran girl, and she was doing some really good work. I've also done a ceremony with somebody who actually went to war, and damn, that guy had some demons. I was also almost jealous for, like, the amount that he was throwing up. I was like, man, I wish I could throw up that much. He's just getting all those demons out. But
that's definitely what I hear.
Yeah, as far as the the purging, I feel like veterans may have a little bit harder time than maybe people who've just maybe have their own different struggles. I know everybody's journey and struggles are you know, their own, and
all up to perspective.
Yeah, all up to perspective. You can't really put ones to another. So it's
We're all just that, really. Humans are very delicate and sensitive. You know, we put all these armors of ego and stuff to protect us, but then we just bury our heart in it too. And we can't love fully and just live true happiness. And it's a really hard battle to peel out all those layers and just kind of, like, just become the love that we all are beneath it, without the fear that we're going to get hurt by an insensitive world. But it's definitely the work we're here to do, you know. It's the fun of life, you know. You got to do something. Exactly. Might as well, you know, heal yourself. So, yeah, let's all do that.
Did you, in a sense of maybe in the start of your creative and artistic journey, did you have any fears of how you were saying maybe putting stuff out there to a judgmental world? And if you did, like, what were some of the things that you told yourself or kept pushing yourself, like self mantras to keep creating, if that makes sense?
Well, I was naturally creative from the beginning. It was just kind of like part of the code of being me. It's like, I gotta create, you know. Like, I even went to an old boys school here in Lima, Peru, and everybody's doing sports, and I was like, I don't care about kicking a ball around. I want to draw, I want to make books, I want to create sculptures. So I was kind of like the nerd of my class for years, and just not outcast. It's not like people hated me for it, but I definitely wasn't one of the cool kids. And that already made, was always making me feel like not good enough, not worthy. Like, you compare yourself to others and you just feel like you're less, which is something that then just gets ingrained in your personality. And I always feel like, you know, I'm not good enough compared to others, which is totally stupid, but it's hard to change these patterns of thoughts and being sometimes. And we just work at it, and it's all practice. So how did I keep on creating? My creation is just inevitable for me as to the levels of honesty. I don't know, like, art's a medicine to myself first. Doing the art is what helps me process any issue or reflection I might have from the inside out. And then throughout the years, I've been sharing it. And, you know, some things are very personal, and that's okay. Like, people actually really value when I get really personal, when your art's really about something that comes from deep inside, and they can see, like, oh, shit, this guy's, like, battling something. Or you know, celebrating something good too. It's not all bad, obviously. And I love to focus on positivity by the name of my brand, as you can see. But yeah, I don't know. I've gotten nothing but more love. The more I am honest with myself, my process, the more people resonate, because we all got our issues and our bullshit and our demons to fight. So when they see somebody like working through it, just like, oh man, somebody's doing the work. Maybe I should do that too. And then we all kind of like pump each other up to do our personal work and become better too. So yeah, I think that's something that I enjoy doing. And if anything, now that sometimes I'll do a painting that is just kind of like for fun or something that looks cool or doesn't, might not have that much meaning. It almost seems like, nah, that painting's not that good because it has less meaning. But sometimes you gotta do those ones too, just for the fun of it, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like the fun ones are the more important ones, like definitely the ones that you do in a sense. Maybe it's just and that it can be translated to outside painting, whatever your creative outlet is, if it's like cooking or you know, engineering something or doing whatever sort of creative outlet it is. It's just like the experimental things that you're just like, let's just throw some stuff together and see what happens, or like the more fulfilling things. But when you do put something together and put it out there, the positive feedback definitely enriches the experience, at least in my experience, at least. And I
you girls make art?
I occasionally will paint, and primarily we'll do like visual stuff, visual jockey video stuff for music, and people who make music around Denver and just friends and whatnot. But
yeah,
it's something that I within like the past like 2.5 years have really retouched with, because I realized it was something that I really enjoyed doing as like a younger self, but kind of pushed aside as I got older. So just trying to rehone those skills and just kind of create my own style of how I see this world and enjoying it along the way, pretty much. I don't know, just applying pigment to the world is just really fun. I was like creation. Yeah just making your mark, you know, something that's not gonna like fade away or, you know,
die.
Yeah, I don't know,
as morbid as that sounds.
Yeah, but I was like I was into like graffiti and street art when I was like a teenager and whatnot, which I enjoy from your work, because I see that you'd use a lot of spray paint, and you do like a lot of wall murals with spray paint. And I was curious if that was like a lot of your younger years too. Were you like a little young graffiti artist tagging up places, or did you kind of just go the legal mural route?
Well, the street art muralism thing is actually a little bit of a newer thing. I think I started actually going up murals and spray paint in 2007. So it's kind of like newer compared to other art that I was already doing at the time. But in my teens, I was tagging with spray cans. Like, this is like early to mid 90s. I was part of a street gang here in Lima, and it was tagging the name of the street gang around Lima. And so I don't know if that you consider that like art, to just put the name of your street gang all over the place, but it was part of that culture to some degree. And the reason why I didn't get into actually continue to do graffiti or muralism was because my brother then got full on into like 90s lettering, writing graffiti. And since we're both artists, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna not do that medium. I'm gonna stick to skateboard graphics and skateboard art. And that way we can both have our own little worlds without getting too competitive and all that stuff. But in Montreal, in Canada, where I live, there's not a big scene for skateboard art. It's not California. And I will always do and still do skateboard graphics and skateboard art. But in Montreal, it was just like tons of people using cans. So it was inevitable that eventually I just wanted to jam with my friends and paint my back yard's wall. And then I got hooked and addicted. It's so fun, you know, because you can do such big things so quick. And for me, it's like a great way to play with ideas, see what works, see what doesn't work. It's kind of like doing like a giant sketch that makes a lot of people happy at the same time. So yeah, enjoy doing it quite much.
Oh, that's definitely awesome. Would you say you get different emotions from using different mediums, like your skateboard graphics or like regular prints or painting stuff, or?
The style does change because, for example, when I was mid-2000, I was like strictly just doing skateboards and art on skateboard. It was kind of like my thing for a while, and not a lot of people were doing it at the time, especially in my area. And it was great. I was playing with lots of ideas. Like basically the only unifying factor is that I was on a skateboard. Other than that, I was playing with all the mediums, all the styles, just playing different topics, different themes. And through that, I found a few things that worked. And then I kept on pulling the thread, which developed the style that I'm better known as. Once I started playing with spray paint, because the medium is so fast and big, like you just painting with a can, the lines like this thick, and yeah, you got to kind of like simplify. So I simplified this style that was working for me so that I could, you know, and you got to go big and you go a little bit more graphic, a little bit more simple. And then that was kind of working on the wall. So then I bring it back onto the canvas or the skateboard. But then when I do a canvas, I can spend like months on one big canvas and just go and like get it all exactly the way I want. And I got different styles and mediums also on the canvas. I like playing, I like exploring. I like to keep it moving. I don't wanna like, yeah, definitely I got a style that people like. And I know if I need to crowd please, I bring that out and I give them what they want. And sometimes it's good to do that. Or sometimes the expression merits that. But other times, especially when I'm going through emotions and self-discoveries and purges, I will totally reinvent what I need to express in order to match the feeling that I'm working through. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Many times it doesn't work. And then I'm like, okay, that didn't really work. So I'm not going to continue doing that. But other times it really works. And I was like, holy shit, I just discovered a brand new style that's good, and let's combine it with other things that already worked. And then you like mix it up and almost create a collage of your styles. Once I'm gonna close the window because my neighbor just started up his water pump and it's very noisy.
Oh, no worries.
All right, that's better. Yeah, lots of farms around here. So yeah, I need to pump the water and my neighbors are poor. So they got a very loud water pump that many times they start at 4 a.m. And my room is kind of like right next to it. So
Man. A little inconvenient times at times, I bet.
Well, I use earplugs. It's
okay. So I was would like to ask, has there been any memorable collaborations that you've done throughout the years of going through numerous different places? I know you're a man of many traveled many places, so I'm sure you've met a lot of different artists, and if there was any of your favorite pieces that you've created together along the way.
Right. Spray paint is a great medium to collaborate because once again, it's quick. So you can just get a jam and do like tons of walls with all your friends and just throw things together and then you're done and it's fun and beautiful. Out here in Peru, I collaborate with this artist named Entes, and he's kind of like the king of street art in Lima. And he has tons of walls. He owns the spray paint store over here, and he's just hooked up in many ways. So we're friends and he gets me walls sometimes and we play. As for canvases, I'm a very slow painter when it comes to canvas because I'm very meticulous. I want everything to be perfect and just super tight and clean. So I pick my battles. A lot of people come to me being like, hey, let's collaborate. And first and foremost, the people I collaborate gotta be friends. Because I'm joining my energy with a person and I don't feel not comfortable, but maybe like it's going to flow better if I'm joining my energy with the energy of somebody I already combine on the human relationship kind of style. So like, say, when I painted with Randall Roberts, he's one of my best friends in the, you know, Colorado visionary art area. And our collabo just came impeccable and beautiful because we just, our energy resonates and mirrors very well. And we, there was zero ego or competition or, you know, I want to do this, I want to do that. And it's more like, hey, what about this? What about that? And then it just combined very beautifully. It's the painting's called Bromance. Then another good collabo I've done is with Amanda Sage. You know, our friendship has developed over the years. And I guess by 2012, we were ready to collaborate. And at the time I was married and my wife was very sick and she was not happy that I was going to Australia, but I was like, I got like a path to follow. I'm this artist and I need to go out there and share my gift and my vibration. So I made a painting to kind of like honor her and bring healing to her. And Amanda's like a master portraitist. So we were talking already in Italy about doing a collabo. And but I knew that if we're going to do it, I had to set her up. So I created this trap where I grabbed an oval canvas because she paints a lot of eggs. Oval kind of went with the shapes that she uses. And she does a lot of like straight face portrait situations. So what I did is I just kind of like left a empty area in the front of the face and just created this big crown and thing all around. And it took me like a month to make this, you know, amazing frame to a face. And she did a face in like a day or two, and the background also, and it came out really, really nice. It flowed really well. Like, you look at it and you're not really sure if it's a Chris Dyer painting or an Amanda Sage painting, which is fantastic, you know, like it's that mix of styles that is a proper combination. So yeah, that's a couple of collabos that come to mind. Yeah, there's others, and there's definitely a few that are waiting for me to be done. There's this artist, this legendary artist from LA, Bua, Justin Bua, who once wanted to collaborate with me, and the canvas is waiting for me in my studio in Montreal, but I get so busy with like too many projects and paintings and murals and traveling. And I just gotta like do things throughout the year. Sometimes some paintings wait a couple years before I even have the time to do it. So when people tell me like, hey, let's collaborate, I gotta be like, sorry, I don't have the time to do it all. And you know, please don't take it personally or anything. So yeah, but it's fun to collaborate. And I usually love collaborating with friends and people that I'm hanging out with already, right?
No, that definitely makes sense. Man, so I don't know if you've ever Googled yourself, but you have a pretty impressive career development. Like your ashram in India for the Beatles, and also Jamaica too, with the Bob Marley thing. How did that come to like existence? Or
all right, well, I'll start with the Bob Marley one. So I was in Miami 2018. So do you guys know about Miami Art Basel? Art Basel is Arts Week in Miami. First week of December every year is basically like the biggest art party in the world. All the galleries, all the artists, all the bloggers, anything art, collectors, they all go to Miami that first week. So basically, if you're an artist and you want to make it, you go to Miami and you try and make your connections, you go to the art fairs and you throw murals left and right, usually for free, to try to get some attention, be like, look what I can do, you know? So I've been doing that for years, where I go to Miami, I buy a bicycle, I run around, look for walls, and then you paint for free. And then hopefully people see it and you get like a foot in the door with a festival or something like that. So I've done that many times. By 2018, I already felt like I was like not too established to play that game, but I was kind of over like that whole like, you know, running around like an art peasant, seeing if somebody gives me a chance. I paid my dues. So I was like, okay, I'm just gonna like go big. And I was already doing well financially. So I was like, okay, let's invest into the situation. So I rented a warehouse in Wynwood, which is the cool street art hipster neighborhood of Miami where everybody goes and does their murals and they throw these street art parties. I rented my own warehouse and I brought all my art from Montreal and around the world, and I did a solo show. Just making that freaking thing was crazy because we had to paint the floors, the walls, put light. We had to turn this abandoned warehouse into like a gallery that looked clean and polished for like thousands of people to come. I called in my store from Denver to drive all the way to Miami and put our store there with Posse Creations products. I flew in my homies, my assistants from Montreal. Basically, I was calling in all the Posse Creations family and make this giant Posse Creations party in Miami. And during that time, well, Miami and Jamaica is kind of like very connected. You know, the Jamaicans, when they want to go to North America and live more posh and all that stuff, They go to Miami. That's where all the Marleys live and all that stuff. And I don't know how the Marley family found my art. I've done portraits of Bob Marley before, so maybe somebody said like, hey, look at what this guy is doing. But I got an invitation. I got an invitation to go and paint the Bob Marley Museum in Nine Mile, Jamaica, which is basically where Bob Marley grew up in the country, in the mountains, and where he was buried. He was buried in the mountains next to his mother. And I was invited to paint that. But when I was asked to do it, I was in the middle of making that giant art party, which was costing me thousands of dollars. And there was a million things to do. And there was tons of stress and bumps and problems and people fighting. And I was just like, I can't agree to do this right now. It sounds cool, sounds amazing. But basically, they were asking me to go to Jamaica the day after my show ended. But there's like, you know, you need days to just wrap up and pack your art well and take it back to Montreal and make sure that everything's like fine. So I was like, I cannot do that. That sounds great. What an honor, but I can't do it. And my friend Ray, who was like the mediator, who, you know, ended up going with me on the trip, was like, Chris, come on, don't you like Bob Marley? It's like, dude, I love fucking Bob Marley since I was 12 years old. Like, he, you know, he's my favorite. He's awesome. I fucking, you know, would die to do this, and I've never been to Jamaica, but it's too stressful. I can't throw so much on my plate. I'm gonna explode. He's like, dude, come on, Bob Marley, you can't say no. I was like, ah, okay, let's do this. And it was a very stressful situation because the day my show ended, I just had all my friends packing things, but my friends don't even know how to pack the things properly. And the main organizer of my show, she was pregnant. And at the time I was like, are you sure you're going to be able to do this show even though you're pregnant? It's like, yeah, I'll be fine. But by the time the show came, she was like at like 8 months and a half and she was just not feeling it. And I was like, I really need you to organize all these people. I can't do it by myself. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm pregnant. Do you want to kill my baby or something? Those kinds of vibes. And I'm just like, I not want to kill no one's baby, but I'm stressing out here. And tomorrow I'm flying to Jamaica, which is an alien country I've never been to. And that stresses me out on its own. And I don't know. Everything came out fine, you know. We packed the things, I flew to Jamaica and I lived in the mountains for a week, painted some murals for them. Area was super nice. What an honor, you know? And yeah, it looks nice on my resume that I painted at the Bob Marley Museum. That's nice too. Then you're asking me about the India one. Now, yeah. The India thing came the year after, actually like probably a month after that Jamaica situation. And I've always wanted to go to India. Like, I'm a traveler. I've been to almost 40 countries. And when you're a traveler, India is kind of like that gem you want in the on your resume, on your traveling resume. Like, yeah, you've been to India. And I had been to Nepal before and I loved Nepal. It's so rich. And everybody who was in Nepal was like, yeah, this is crazy. But India is like Nepal, even crazier and dirtier and even more stressful. The reason why like India is kind of like professional traveling is because it's so overwhelming and you kind of got to like know how to travel poor countries. But I've done that like for many years. So it was fine. But I was always waiting and waiting, like not yet. And I was going to turn 40 years old that year. It's like, you know what? I'm almost 40. Let's do India. It's time, you know, let's do this. You can afford it. You can take a month off. Actually, the Miami show worked well in the end, and I sold some big paintings, so I made some money, and I was like, all right, let's just reward yourself now. You've worked so hard, just go to India and fuck off and just fucking look at temples and meditate and do some cool things. But I'm also very I'm restless. I gotta stay productive. I gotta do something to do with art. I can't just not do art. Art, doing art's my nature. And in a previous trip the year before, I was in Australia, and my friend Olivia Jane Art, she had gone to India and she had painted the Beatles ashram with this other artist, Miles Tolan. And she was telling me, like, okay, so there's this abandoned ashram in Rishikesh, and it's not blown up yet. It's where the Beatles went when they went to visit the Maharaja. But in the 80s, the Maharaja moved it somewhere else, and he just left all these weird, trippy buildings, and the jungle overtook it. And now it's just kind of like abandoned weirdness. But more recently, they've kind of like cleaned up the brush, and now it's a tiger reservoir. And street artists have been going there and throwing murals on these decaying walls. Like, for a street artist, a decaying wall and urban decay and degradation is such a beautiful canvas, that's a juxtaposition of, because you're spray painting something modern and cool, but if it's on something like ancient, like you gave me the walls of Machu Picchu to spray paint, if that was allowed, or if I dared to do that, that'd be so dope, you know?
Yeah.
So, but this is not so Asian. This is from the 60s. It's like not like that bad if you paint it. Anyways, I'm making the story really long, but so that was the main reason why I was like, fuck, I gotta go to India next year. Like, you know, there's this fucking awesome place. It hasn't been blown out of the water yet. People don't really know it so much. So that was like my main thing for India. I gave myself a month. I went all over India, and then Rishikesh was in the middle of it. I found somebody who knew my art there. They gave me an art, a residency and an hotel, so I didn't even have to pay for a hotel while I was there. He went and talked with the guards and be like, hey, this is a famous artist. He wants to paint one of the meditation domes. And they're like, ooh, there's only 6 or 7 meditation domes. We don't give in to just whoever. And how do we know this is a good artist, not a bad artist? But these tiger reservoir guards don't know anything about art. So you can be like, oh, I am a good artist. It's like, I don't know. So then we had to like bring out the Instagrams, like, look, he's got lots of followers because people like his art and he's going to do a good job. So they gave me the thumbs up, but it was very much, it almost like the first day when we went, it sounded like they were not going to give it to me. And I was like, please give me that meditation dome. Cause as he saw, it's like a giant eggshell structure that back in the day, people would go in and meditate. And I guess that light of the universe would go in there or something. And it was awesome. There was no stairs. There was like these ladders made with like wood that they had kind of like, you know, hammered together, super sketchy. And I had smuggled some spray paint into the country, but just like a handful of cans, and definitely not enough to paint that egg. So I had to use bucket paint. But in this so ghetto, you don't just go to a paint store and tell them like, hey, give me a bucket of yellow and a bucket of this, like we do in North America. You kind of gotta like buy these like little bottles of tint, and you buy white paint, and then you put the tint in till you find it's good enough, and you move it with a stick. So basically I was brush painting the whole dome and then finishing it off with spray paint. And it was super difficult, but super fun and super special. And it was definitely not paid. It was like, you know, not illegal, but definitely nobody asked me to do that. I went there and I put my money and I did it for the fun of doing something beautiful. And that's the ultimate reason why you do art at the end of the day. It did give me a lot of Instagram points, so I guess that's kind of it. But yeah,
got the clout. has there been a memorable place that you've been to in all your travels that you should recommend everybody to go to at least once in their life?
No, everywhere I go sucks. I'm just joking. fuck. Well, Bali is a little played out. I tell you, like, oh, go to Bali, it's beautiful. But so many cool people and hippie folk go to Bali already. So it's not like a big secret. But first time I went to Bali was 2005, and I was just so impressed. I was like, whoa, this is a really trippy island. Just the sculptures everywhere, the music's alien, the culture's just so special and unique and powerful. There's lots of spirits in the land. There's the nature of it, surfing waves, volcanoes, animals, monkeys, weird clothing. Once again, the music super trippy, the dancing super alien, the paintings are beautiful, and what's cool, the woodwork, the sculpturing in stone. Basically, it's just like amazing for art, but no artist is like, I'm this artist who's done this sculpture and this painting. They're just kind of like, this is the art we do, we kill it. Yeah. And who gives a shit about our name? So it's very ego-less too, which I enjoy. So that's cool. I've been to really awesome places. I've been to Egypt. That was fucking awesome. I took a cruise down the Nile, stopping in all the Egyptian ruins. Where else have I been? The year before, I went to Palestine and Israel and Jordan. And that was the Middle East. Yeah, that was very interesting. And in Palestine, I was invited to paint this refugee camp. And that was something else, you know? It was like very ghetto, dangerous, gunshots, mostly kids, because they kill all the adults. So they just make a ton of kids in order to like not disappear as a country from the occupation. But the kids are wild. The kids are taught to be naughty kids, to be rebellious, to be fighters against the oppression that they live through. And here we are, a gang of street artists coming to paint trippy creatures on their walls to cheer them up and be like, hey, we care about you. And we're just artists, and art's our way to, like, you know, show you that we love you, and that to make your refugee camp a little bit nicer. But the kids didn't really get it, and they were very kind of like aggressive. They're always like stealing your cans and throwing shit at you, and they kept on pulling my dreads, and sometimes they like start cheering at you insults. And it was like really hard, because I guess they see this like dreadlock white dude with tattoos, and in their brain they associated with Israelis, you know, like soldiers that might have come through their country and treated them bad look like me. And so it was challenging and hard for me, because I'm sensitive, and I was there to serve them. You know, I was like, hey, I'm here to fucking paint for you for free, to like, you know, make your life, I don't know if happier, but at least more colorful or something. It's all I got. I'm an artist. So it was very challenging, but it was a great experience. And once I was in that area, the ruins of that area are amazing. You know, I went to like Jerusalem and Bethlehem. And then in Jordan, I went to the city of Petra, which is like 6,000 years old or something like that. It's just like carved into the mountains with the Bedouins running around and horses, super gorgeous. I didn't really like paint too much in the country of Jordan, but very interesting culture. That was like my last big trip. There's more trips. I actually had a traveling show on YouTube called The Adventures of Chris Dyer, if you want to check it out. There's 38 episodes, and each episode is kind of like average half an hour of me traveling to a new country, painting something, exploring the culture. And yeah, it's pretty
fun.
Check
that out. Made your own like YouTube show of just traveling and doing art?
Yeah, it's just self-produced. I think I started in the year 2012. First episode was Italy. I was just kind of like, okay, I'm in Italy, let's film what's happening. But then the next month I went somewhere else and I filmed that too. And then it's like, hey, I think I could do a series. So then it kind of like developed into more, I wouldn't say professional, because basically it's filmed by me and my pocket camera and just film everything. And it's a decent camera, but it's not like I got a crew of filmers following me around like an actual TV show. But I pulled it off, and my editor is very creative. And just raw material you're in is amazing, you don't need high quality technical stuff to embellish it. It helps, you know, but when the raw materials is amazing and you're having a an exciting, rich life and you just kind of share it, it makes for a good show. So yeah, it's up there on YouTube. I had to stop it because I'm not traveling anymore. So now my newest YouTube series is a podcast. You know, we all do podcasts these days, I guess.
Exactly.
Right. No, they're fun. You know, a lot of people were interviewing me, like you guys are interviewing me, especially once the quarantine started to hit. I was doing like fucking not one a day, but one every second day. Somebody was like, okay, Chris, down here, like make me do some questions. And I'm nice. I'm like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And then I was like, man, I'm just so bored of talking about myself. I wanna share the stories of my friends, because I got so many awesome artist friends who don't have my same spotlight or exposure, but I'm like, these guys are awesome. Why isn't anybody asking them questions? So I'm gonna make my own podcast. So I bought my cameras, I bought my microphones and mixer and all that shit. And then the whole concept is it's an in-person interview where I go into their studios and I film their studios and their world and their activities. And then I interview them for like an hour and a half. So it's like a mini documentary for like an hour and a half. And I filmed already like a good 25 episodes so far, and they come out once a week. So I filmed a bunch and they're stashed, and my editor like polishes them and makes it all work, and they come out every Friday. So today the newest episode came out. I think it's number 14 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a fun project. It cost me money though, which I shouldn't even mention, but it's an investment, and it's not, I lost a lot of my job since this whole Corona shit thing started. And I really, when I was thinking about doing it, it's like, the voice was like, Chris, you gotta do your own podcast. Chris, you gotta share your own artist friends. Chris, you gotta do this thing. I was like, dude, that's like equipment money. And then I gotta pay my editor, and then you gotta promote. And it's like, I don't know if I can afford this right now. And the voice like, just do it. You'll get the money that you need. Keep on the service of spreading good vibes into the world. And I'm like, okay, so I'll do it. Very obedient to my inner voice. And it's been super fun. I love it. Now, my only struggle is just getting more people to see it. You know, my average views is like, you know, 700 to 1,000 or a little bit more per episode, which is okay. That's enough people. But I really want like everybody to see it, you know, but yeah. I don't know how to play the YouTube game so well. I'm still learning and I'm building my numbers. So yeah, it's all a learning process.
Well, I didn't know that you had a YouTube series or show, so I'll be sure to search for that and subscribe and check out all the content there. I spend my fair share amount of YouTube time watching videos, so I look forward to seeing some of the content that you have on there. You had mentioned you're obedient to your inner voice. Does that inner voice ever turn on you and like become not so positive? And if it does, do you have anything that you do to stop that inner voice from being a negative inner voice?
Well, there's different voices, right? There's a voice of like your higher self, your giving self, and there's the ego afraid self. There's, you know, and it's all about spotting who's talking. So for example, with the podcast thing, it's like the ego would probably not be like, hey, spend a bunch of money to help your friends, because the ego's like, well, what's in it for me? You know, how do I become like bigger and a bigger artist, and where's the money and where's the recognition, when it's basically me asking other people about their process and basically investing into each one of my friends. Like where's the ego reward from that? So I'm like, well, not a lot. But you, once again, spread good vibes in the world. Like, I'm always going to spread my good vibes. I got plenty of good vibes to spread. I spread it every day. I do my art. I do my talks, workshops, podcasts like you guys, etc. But then if I get my army of positive, amazing friends, and I give them, like, a chance to pass their vibes, then I'm just building an army of positive creation people who are doing the same as me, but in their own way. And hopefully that podcast gets them a couple jobs and then more empowered, and then they can empower other people. We all got to help each other out. So that's what I recognize, like, okay, that's the higher self voice. That's your, like, Chris Dyer's here to serve La Pachamama and the light and all the positive things. So that's where you recognize it. And that's the whole thing about, like, listening to the voices. You got to always be self-observant and really try to see where are your actions and your words coming from. And I will fail many times. I probably already did today by saying things that didn't come from my higher self, that could have come from, like, the ego or a self-defensive position or fear or you know, my human bullshit stuff that I don't know if I'll always carry it, but it's really hard to shake off sometimes. But the more you observe it and recognize it, the more you can be like, yo, Chris, maybe don't send that email today. Let the emotion go by, and then with a new vibration come through again and talk to more, and maybe, like, you know, you can be a little bit more loving, you know, come from love as opposed to any negative emotion that might come towards you from living in a world with other people with negative emotions thrown at you. So yeah, I guess meditation helps with that. I try to meditate in the morning, at night, and I just, in general, I try to be present. Once again, I'm talking to you as if, like, I've achieved it, which I haven't, but I'm working at it all the time. I try my best, and I hope that people will forgive me for whenever I fucking shit the bed. And hopefully I'm getting better at it all the time by becoming more and more present in my being and always choosing love over fear or hate or destruction.
Yeah, I feel like understanding that it's something that's like an internal journey that you're always chasing, I feel like, is a big, big help to understanding, like, this world. I don't know, yeah. Like,
right.
It's always a pursuit of happiness.
Trying to become.
Sorry to cut you off, but yeah.
No. I kind of had a question. Would you, if you, like, could call yourself in 2003 when you, like, were just starting up Positive Creations, would you, like, believe that your art got to, like, the level that it is today? I don't know if that's a weird question or not. Sorry, that's random.
No, it's a great question. And it's hard for me to remember exactly where I was in my mind at 2003, but I did have dreams. Basically, the whole idea about being a traveling artist came to me in, like, 2001, when I went from negative to positive. I never really was negative. We're all really positive inside, but we just put all these armors of negativity to protect yourself in a world that is, you know, pretty negative many times. So when you become negative, you fight back the negativity that comes to you. But all that fucking inner fight and like, you know, defensiveness and covering up your heart and your love is not a good way to live. But so basically in 2001, I went tree planting and I started learning, like, holy shit, the world's made out of nature. Like, the world's actually dirt and trees and insects and fresh air. And I've just been living in cities all my life. And this culture, this man-made ideologies and structures has convinced me that the world is a certain way, but doesn't have to be that way. It was invented at some point. And before that, for a long time, it was just this, nature and spirit. And even when it came to spirituality, I was always trying to find God through religion, through Catholicism or Christianity, which is the culture I was brought up in here in Peru. And it wasn't really working out for me because I was a negative person. You know, I was in a street gang, as I told you before. I was a big drunken bastard once I moved to Canada. I just did lots of destructive things. I was a skateboarder. I was an asshole. I was just kind of like, you know, a punk, a metalhead. I was a lot of things that were different parts of my process. You had to, like, kind of like dive into negativity a little bit in order to learn from that energy and see that you're not really happy when you're negative. You know, it's just a defense mechanism. So, I forgot your question. How I envisioned myself to be. So basically, in that whole process of being a spiritual artist, and basically I always knew I wanted to be an artist. But when I turned good, I was like, oh, now I'm gonna do spiritual art, and I'm gonna like do yoga and meditate and do psychedelics from a more conscious intention and bring all these messages from the Most High and present them as paintings. And that will be the best activism to make the world a better place. So that was my intention. At the same time, through tree planting, I met hippies, and the hippies were all a bunch of travelers, and they're all saying like, yeah, the best way to learn to grow is traveling around the world and hitchhiking and all these things. And I was like, holy shit, I've just been like kind of like drinking beer in the city all this time, and didn't think there was a whole world out there for me to discover. Do I do this? So I was like, oh, how do we make money from art? So far I hadn't really even sold any paintings. I was in art school already for like a couple years, no, like 4 years by then, and I've never really sold many paintings, maybe for like $100 here and there to like a parent or something, like some adult. I wasn't out there as a professional artist. I was just trying to learn art, and I didn't know about an art world, and this is pre social media days, so I didn't even have a webpage. I was just kind of like just making art, and you don't go up to people and be like, hey, I got art, you want to buy it? Like, it was a different style. So I was like, what do I do? I was like, maybe I'll make a calendar. My first product was a calendar. It was like just a poster with my best painting at the top and all the dates at the bottom. And I think I went to a printer and I told them like, hey, like, this is my design. I made it in Photoshop. And please make me like, you know, 200 of these posters. And I think it cost me like $100, which is a lot of money for me at the time. And then I went around my college to try to sell it to her, like, hey, you want to buy this calendar for $5? Hey, you want to buy this calendar for $5? And it kind of worked, you know, because I really wanted like a cool poster of a cool image, and a calendar was something, once again, functional back there. That's the days before everybody having a telephone in their pocket that had their calendars. Calendar actually on their wall kind of was something people needed back in the day. So that was my first product that kind of worked out, and without money, I think I raised $500, and then I went hitchhiking around Mexico for 5 weeks. Actually, it took a bus from Montreal to El Paso, Texas, and then crossed the border to Mexico, and then we started hitchhiking all the way the west coast of Mexico to Guatemala, and we went a little into Guatemala. So like, super, you know, and this is like 2002, so it's right after 9/11, and people are really like not down to give rides to, like, you know, hippie terrorist looking kind of folk. But it worked out, you know, we always got rides. We slept in sketchy places on that trip. It was me and my friend Khalil from college. He didn't know Spanish and I did, so we just adventured around Mexico. It was fucking awesome. I loved it, and I learned so much in that trip. We ended up in Palenque at one point, and then we did like massive amount of mushrooms as we walked around Maya ruins and temples in the rainforest. It was amazing. So I guess that's like the beginning of positive creations. Me just dreaming like, I want to be an artist and I want to travel, so I got to start making these cheap products because no one's gonna buy my paintings, and with these cheap products, I can keep on traveling and keep on learning, keep on growing, and etc. And then once I got out of school and I had to make a web page, I called my web page Positive Creations, because I thought chrisdyer.com sounded fucking boring. And Positive Creations was like, you know, sounded cool, sounded like the Bob Marley song Positive Vibrations, but with creations, it was like very encompassing for like all the things I did, you know, because I paint, but I'm just generally creative. I like to make videos and talk and write and draw. And positivity is basically the new direction that I've chosen for my life. I want to be good. I want to help the good side. I want to be positive. And, you know, I honor the darkness and the negativity too, but we live in a world where it's just too much negativity and darkness, and warriors of the positive side are needed. So I was going in that intention. So yeah, I guess that's the beginning of Positive Creations. I guess like it became more of a brand around 2004, came out in the newspaper, and this businessman saw me, and I was just like, on the newspaper is a big picture of me, to my skateboards around me, all like young and cute, and it said like, Chris Dyer skates through positivity, something really cheesy, you know, classic newspaper stuff. And this businessman saw it and he's like, oh my God, this guy, I can milk him so hard. So he came to me and he's like, hey, we got to make you a brand. Your webpage even has the best name for a brand, Positive Creation. So we're going to make this a brand. I got money. And this is what you got to do. You got to make yourself some logos and let's make some t-shirt designs and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. And he promised me the moon. And then when we're doing it, I'm like, I want organic cotton, you know, like I'm into the environment. I want to respect the earth. Let's do hemp, organic cotton. Let's make these really ambitious, colorful prints because my art's very colorful. And he's like, no, this is too expensive. He wanted something very cheesy, you know, very commercial and mm-hmm. just like classic hippie bullshit that it wasn't my vibe. I was doing my own thing and he wasn't down with the environmental stuff. So we eventually broke ways, but I kept on doing it as a brand. And, you know, the story of my brand keeps on going from, you know, 2003, 2004 on.
Yeah.
I've had probably like 6 to 7 different partners throughout the years and different things didn't work out with different one of them for different reasons, but I kept on trying and trying and trying, looking for the perfect partner for my brand to work out. And finally, I found the perfect partner in my friend Corey a couple of years ago after the Oregon eclipse. His roommate Jared, who had a booth at the Oregon eclipse, who had sold really well that festival, was giving me a ride to the airport after crashing at his place, and Corey was there. And he was like, Chris Dyer, like, you got tons of products from different brands and you got a great following and you're very popular. Why don't you have a booth at these festivals? It's like, dude, I'm like, I can't be bothered. Like, I'm coming from Canada with a suitcase. What, I'm gonna pack a booth in my suitcase and like, what, I gotta man it and talk to people. I'm already exhausted from painting my murals all festival long and selling things on top of it. It's just, I can't do it. I need somebody to do it for me and I can't do it. And Corey was there in the van going towards the airport. And he had just come back from traveling himself. He had just come from a surfing trip to Bali and he had no job. He had no prospects. He had nothing going on for himself. And Jared's like, what about Corey? Let Corey do it. And he's like, Corey, you want to do it? You want to do my brand? He's like, can look into it. So he actually went in, he did a business proposal. He listed very well organized. He said like, this is the things we need to buy in order to make a booth. This is the investment I need from you, which is like around, I don't know, $20,000 to $30,000, which I didn't really have, but I was just basically in the year 2018, every time I would get paid, I would just pay him. It's like, okay, I just got paid 3 G's. Here you go. Go and buy yourself some mannequins. And just got paid from this client. Go and buy yourself some t-shirts, buy some tables, buy the booth, pay the festival. Eventually I bought him a van. Like, I don't even drive, but I guess I own a van in Colorado and he drives it or something, but... So yeah, so now, and the story of how he took over the whole brand is a little bit of a sad story in a way, but good story in the end. Do you mind me just yapping your heads off like this?
Oh, no, we enjoy it.
I enjoy your stories.
Okay, cool. So remember that show I was telling you about in Miami that I rented this big warehouse, yeah. And I told Corey to drive from Colorado in the van and bring the store and put the store and blah, blah, blah. So at that point, I had two business partners. I had Corey for the booth and the festival situation. And then I had this other guy who I don't want to mention his name because I don't or never want to throw him under the bus or give him a bad rep. But he was my online person fulfillment guy. I paid him to remake the web store and to be the guy who receives orders, talks with the client, sends the product out, etc. He was the online dude. So when I was doing that big party, in Miami, I was just calling all my Positration family, like, Corey, come over, dude, come over, blah, 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 blah. But first I need to go to the jungle. I had one of my retreats in the jungle. So yes. I went to Peru to do my retreat in the jungle for a week, which was perfect. I went to purge and clean and purify my vibration before going to the madness of Miami Art Basel and hold ground as, like, I guess, Mr. Famous Artist Guy or whatever. You know, when you're renting a warehouse and you're doing a solo show, you're the focus of all the attention. And I get really kind of like shy or just like, I just don't want that spotlight, but you kind of got to just own it and be like, well, I'm Chris Dyer. What you going to do? You know, but it makes me very nervous. It makes me very like, I don't want all the fucking attention. I just want to be like another dude and us all just laugh together and not be more special or better than anybody else in any situation. So it was good that I went to the jungle to kind of like recalibrate, know who I am and be like, you are a bring down positive vibration light in that big madness of ego and darkness of Miami. Just do your service, stay humble, give the energy that people need. People are starving. It's all good. In that week that I was in the jungle, so basically we sell products online, as you can imagine, and then there's some money, and then it gets deposited, or at least my cut gets deposited in my PayPal account, and then I pay my bills and the million things that I need or, you know, invest into. In this case, the warehouse was costing me $8,000 to rent, but I had to pay like a bunch of other things to make it all happen. It was like an investment of like, you know, $11,000 to $12,000 all in all. So before I went to the jungle, I tell the online dude, like, hey, make sure to send the deposit, which was like $4,000, like half the money for the warehouse, send it to my pregnant lady organizer so she can pay the warehouse and we can start building this crazy gallery. They gotta paint the walls, the floors, etc. So I go to the jungle, I disconnect, I fucking, you know, puke a bunch, ayahuasca, nature, shanti shanti, full light. And then I call my pregnant partner organizing the show, and she's like, dude, we're a week late because the guy never sent the money. He's like, what? But I told him to send the money so you guys could get going.
Yeah.
So then I hit him up and I'm like, yo, why didn't you send the money? He's like, oh, stall this, the bank. And I didn't know if you wanted me to send it to this person. It's like, dude, just send it. And then he kept on stalling. Day after day, he was not sending the money. And I'm telling Corey, like, yo, dude, like, we need to get this warehouse going. And the partner here, I wish I could use his name. It'd be easier than calling partner, but... this dude's not sending the money. Can you just give me whatever capital you have from the booth? And he's like, well, I need that money to buy the product that I'm bringing to you in Miami. But yeah, let's just get this fucking warehouse going because we need this. So he gave all his money to a warehouse and we start going. And then I'm in Miami and we're preparing. And the guy was just not sending the money, not sending the money. And then I find out that this guy decided to throw his own party in Miami. Oh. He's a lot younger than me. Like I paid my dues and, you know, I got enough connections and I've been in the scene for like a minute that I feel I can throw a party of that magnitude. I know that my community has my back because once again, I paid my dues. I've done favors to a lot of people and they owe me and then they help me and then we make this happen. This guy just thought that he could do the same. So I guess he rented a warehouse and he called in other visionary artists from Colorado to do basically the same party on the same dates. Okay. And he's like working for me. He's like a positive creation important guy. But then there was the question of the money. Where is he getting the money to rent this warehouse? And I guess apparently he stole a good in between November and December, the sales of 2 months, he stole around 20 G's and was throwing this party, inviting a lot of my visionary artist friends from Denver to compete with me. And then I'm seeing them at rest where the money is coming from. They're just like, oh, cool, we're all here. And I'm like, yeah, awesome. that's too bad that your party competes with mine. And I was the only really like visionary art party of Miami at that point. And now there's two. And he was even saying like, oh, I'm going to get Tipper to do my party. So basically he wanted to beat my party on top of it. He's like, dude, I've been fucking saving, like I've been just putting down all this money to do something important for my art career. And now you kind of want to like crush my party. And what the fuck's going on? I was just so in shock that somebody would do that. And I'm very nice, but I was like, I had to get, like, I remember being like on a ladder on top of my wall, painting this mural outside of the warehouse that I you know, on top of doing this party, I had to paint this giant mural for people to arrive and be like, well, this is a mural. So I'm being like, I'm on top of this ladder spray painting on the phone. And I'm like, dude, you gotta fucking give me my money. Like, I need to pay this thing. Like, Corey has no money for the product. This shit's gonna fall apart. What the fuck? And I yelled at him so hard that that's where our business relationship ended. But it was like the beginning of March, Christmas sales. And he left so many things unsent to all these clients who were like, who needed their things. And so that's where Corey stepped up, learned how to update an online store, started taking the reins of talking to all the customers who had made, and this is while he's doing this big party with me and the store. So basically he had to take over the online side of things. And on top of it, he went after this guy. He started like harassing him and going looking for him at parties, being like, motherfucker, you gotta give us back this money. This is the brand's money and we need it today. If not, we're gonna tell everybody you just stole from Chris Dyer. And that's not good karma or a good rep for you, dude. I guess his party also just fell through because he didn't know how to organize a giant art party just like that. And he went at partners that were working with me, like Moksha Family, which is like the visionary entity of Miami. He would call them up and be like, hey, instead of doing stuff with Chris, you should do it with me. But Ray, who runs Moksha Family, he's fucking gangsta, and told him like, dude, you don't come into my city thinking you're going to throw a visionary art party. I've been doing this for 10 years and just show up. You think I'm going to be working for you and you're like stealing Chris's concept and money. Like, if you fucking make my party, because he was throwing his party like one of those nights, if you throw your party the same night as my party, I'm gonna fucking come to your house and kill you. And the guy's like, oh God, okay. Because you don't mess with like, you know, Miami Latino badass motherfuckers. It's sad that it has to get all aggressive like that, but sometimes you gotta like have kind of like gangster dudes on your side when people are trying to like steal your shit. Anyways, at the end of that story, the father of that guy who robbed me cut us a check and bailed out his kid, who probably lost a lot of money in that party. And then he had to move out of Denver and Colorado in general because the word had gotten out. I never made a post or told people about what had happened. I didn't want to ruin his life. I forgive right away. It's like, well, I got my money. Just let him live in whatever negativity he chooses to live. I'm not going to hold it against him. He's a human being. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody deserves forgiveness, but I definitely don't want to fuck with that guy anymore. But I guess word got around and he was embarrassed and he had to leave town, and well, I wish him the best, you know, but that's how Corey became the main brand manager of Positive Creation. It's a very long story. I hope I didn't bore you, but it's interesting too.
Oh no, it was a roller coaster. Very much so. I enjoyed it every step of the way. That's awesome to hear.
It's all this story I told you, it's filmed and it's the adventure episode. I can't even remember what number, but it's the Miami Art Basel 2018 episode. It's kind of like almost like 45 minutes long and it's really fun.
I'm gonna go watch that. I'm gonna order some food and watch that for sure. Appreciate your time and coming on here. Was there anything else you wanted to ask him?
I always have one question that I like to ask guests that come on, and I never know if I ask it right, so if it doesn't make sense, bear with me. But so if someone wanted a look inside your mind of like how your artistry works and everything like that, mostly just because like we're festivalists ourselves, I guess would be the right word.
What psychedelic would be the best to describe like what's going on inside your brain? I know it's probably different for everyone, but like.
What psychedelic would my brain be tainted on right now as I'm sober? I don't know. My brain's quite sober. I don't see auras. I'm not much of a psychic. I got feelings and I feel, and my intuition is waking up and I feel a lot of things are happening in my dreams, but I can't really remember what, but every single day somebody writes me saying like, hey, you came into my dream last night and you helped me out. And I'm like, awesome. I seem to do that every night. I don't know how. As for psychedelics, I'm an ayahuasca dude. You know, for me, ayahuasca's been a good partner in my development. As much as it has its challenges and its intensities, I've really been able to get quite deep into the rabbit hole of what reality is, without short-circuiting myself. It seems sometimes like I'm getting close to short-circuiting myself. Like sometimes I'm like, whoa, how are you gonna get back from this one, dude? There's no coming back from this perspective. And you come back and you're like, holy shit, what the fuck? Like, this is just too much, because true reality is almost incomprehensible. But you come back and then here I am, and my brain still works, I'm sober, and I try to appreciate being back in the physical plane where I'm a human and I'm a man and I make art and I have experiences, and I try myself to navigate through it with the most amount of love as possible, as to connect with my true God self that's somewhere else or right now, right here, all the time, everywhere. And I'm just like a little fragment of it, a little avatar in the video game of life. So yeah, I'd say real normal life is the true. Other things are just kind of like the portals to seeing our true selves, and that's a beautiful thing.
I definitely agree.
I feel like trying to find your true self and figuring out who you are is a really important journey for your time on this earth, being in this human body. It's like figuring out who you are is very important to yourself, I feel like. So
that is true.
Yeah, it seems like you've found yourself along the way, but you're still accepting to the journey. So it's
always nice more work to be done.
Yeah, it's nice to see there's always understanding that there's always work, but you know, having a good outlook on it, you know what I mean? You can be either positive or negative about it, and it's your choice, you know, in a sense of choosing to look positively on it. And
it's definitely true.
That's how I feel about it,
so. Right, and it's not about being like positive and happy all the time. I think that's kind of like impossible. Like moments of sadness and depression and fear and all the negative emotions are as valuable and valid as well. I feel it's just having the positive perspective even when you're going through separation and struggle. It's just basically, if or all psychedelics really have taught me anything, it's just surrender. Just fucking let it go. Just fucking give up. Just be, accept, flow, and be in gratitude for whatever is. And these years that we're living will be a massive, or is a massive, psychedelic group experience we're going through, in order to learn to accept, surrender, and flow, while still trying our best to be our best versions, you know? Because there are things we might not agree to, usually coming from top, that we gotta be like, all right, yeah, we wanna keep it safe, but only, you know, don't take my freedoms full on. I still really need to, you know, do these things, and I do not comply 100% with the world you're bringing me, Mr. Man. So we try our best to bring forth the world we believe in, but also surrender to the experience that happens. You can't control the world, you can only control yourself or your perspective of things, and you make the most out of it, and you give thanks every single day, because everything's meant to be and everything is for our growth and the experiences that God wanted to live through us. And that's a beautiful thing.
I definitely concur with that.
Definitely.
Where can everyone find you, just so that plug yourself, all that stuff?
Well, my address is
don't dox yourself.
No, I got no address. I live on a dirt road with no name, and my land has no number, so you couldn't find me even if you tried. But I guess if you want to find me on the internet, my name is Chris Dyer, and I'm on all the platforms imaginable, Instagram and Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and blah blah blah. I'm around there. Just Google me up.
Yeah, or you can find them on Google.
Find them on Google. Exactly. Cool.
All right.
Thank you again so much. We hope you have a good rest of your day, and we look forward to seeing more of your art in the future.
Yeah. Thank you, girls. I appreciate your time, and may you have a blessed day.
You too.
Me too.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Are you picking up now?